This weekend starts right after this.
Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates and an intuitive drag-and-drop website builder, you can get your business online today. No coding needed. Start now at Wix.com. That's Wix.com.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Refugees equal opportunities. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
From small businesses to large ones, the flood of migrants from Syria to Germany has brought thousands of unexpected new customers.
Taking care of an older relative will have lessons for middle-aged adults who are part of what's called the sandwich generation.
Need help with figuring out which presidential candidate to support? There's an app for that, and it mimics a dating app. We'll explain how.
And longtime fantasy football holdout Jason Gay of the Wall Street Journal takes the plunge.
Like a lot of folks, I had this attitude about fantasy football for a very long time that it was not something for me. Fantasy has just sort of become this massive American preoccupation, and I just felt, as a sports columnist, I might just be professionally negligent if I wasn't somehow involved in this.
Jason explains his rough go in the early weeks of fantasy in about 20 minutes. One thing about the overwhelming numbers of refugees arriving in Germany from places like Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East, there's money to be made from the services they need. Germany is preparing for 800,000 asylum seekers just this year alone. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Anton Troyanovsky, who's with us from the Bureau in Berlin. Anton, what have you found?
You've got private companies involved every step of the way. When the migrants land on Greek islands, they've got lots of small Greek shops. Keepers selling to them their special discounts for cell phones tailored to the migrants. And then here in Germany, as well as in Austria, there are private companies that are actually managing these refugee camps. And one in particular we looked at, called ORS Service, is actually owned by a big private equity fund out of London, whose investors include some of America's biggest pension funds, such as the California State Teachers Retirement System. So it's basically a fact of life here in Europe that these companies are involved and are profiting from this huge migration crisis. It's one, you know, some people say is necessary, a necessary response to this issue, and that in some cases also advocacy groups criticize.
Wow. All right. So the advocacy groups are saying what?
Well, in the case of the refugee camps in particular, you know, that's one of the most controversial fields where private companies are involved. And there you do have a lot of problems where the debate is, well, are the private companies responsible for that, or is it simply inescapable that you're going to have problems at these big camps? Case in point being a huge camp right outside of Vienna where as many as 4,500 people have been sheltered or put up in recent months. The camp is only made for 1,800 people, so that means thousands at some points have had to sleep outside, literally under bushes and under trees.
Wow.
And again, that's this private equity-owned company that runs the camp. So advocacy groups such as Amnesty International have been saying the company is one of the parties at fault here for not organizing the camp well enough. The company counters that it's doing all it can, and it's an issue of, you know, what resources it gets from the Austrian government, which is the contracting party in this case.
Talking with Wall Street Journal reporter Anton Troyanovsky in Berlin. He's got a piece about how in Europe, everybody from small shopkeepers to private equity finding ways to profit from the migrant flood. All right, so tell me about some of the small shopkeepers maybe and what they've had to do to respond in order to meet, I suppose, very increased demand.
Absolutely. So in Greece, you have this whole industry that's been geared toward tourism. You have hotels, you have the ferries, and you have shopkeepers that sell tourist items like blankets and souvenirs, etc. And that whole industry has been reorienting toward the refugees. So the hotel owners are now putting up the migrants. People who have been selling tourist knickknacks are now starting to sell camping gear and other stuff that the refugees need. Again, one of my favorite examples that my colleague who actually went to Greece found was people selling Vodafone cell phone SIM cards have been selling them as a special offer in combination with a 50% discount on ferry tickets to Athens, which, of course, all the migrants are using in order to get from those small Greek islands to Athens and then travel onward to Austria and Germany.
But I think you pointed out that from a business standpoint, the margins aren't necessarily great, right?
So I really looked closely at this ORS company that manages refugee camps, and that's how the founder explained it to me. He said it was essentially a volume business.
Okay.
The margins, you know, are in fact small. It's only really a few dollars per person per day that you're getting from the government for this. So you need large volumes to make it worthwhile, and that's certainly what we've been seeing in the last few months.
All right. Thanks, Anton. Wall Street Journal reporter Anton Troyanovsky from the Bureau in Berlin, Germany. 12 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Here's another look at a scenario that's consistently on the rise in the U.S. Middle-aged adults taking care of elderly relatives in addition to their own families. Here's some guidance on managing from This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
It's called the sandwich generation, those of us who are taking care of not only our kids, but our parents. And that can lead to a lot of stress. Charles Passy of MarketWatch is here with some recommendations on how to better live the sandwich life. Charles, why is it important to deal with money issues first?
Well, because, I mean, it's kind of the engine behind the train. I mean, and it is very much a financial dilemma. I mean, you know, in my situation, I mean, my father, I'm dealing with an elderly father, 89 years old, and I still have a teenage daughter at home. But my father has, you know, some retirement money. He's in better shape than a lot of people his age. But, you know, we have to kind of keep his money in check and manage it so that he doesn't run out of it. And I'm, you know, I've got a daughter that I'm, you know, kind of getting ready to send off to college in a couple of years. So there's this big financial stuff. And, you know, it's great to talk about quality of care or quality of colleges, but if you don't have the money to pay for it, you can't do anything. And you're kind of sort of looking at two checkbooks at once.
Making money decisions for your kids is one thing, but making them for your parents, I would think, is a lot more difficult. How do you get into that conversation?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, you have to be upfront about it. You know, one of the things you should do is really kind of, you know, first of all, especially with an elderly parent, even if they're, you know, of sound mind, which my father is, you probably do want to have, you know, power of attorney, you know, especially if there's a chance that they, you know, that they may get, you know, infirmed or to not have the capacity to deal with their finances at some point. So you want to be able to, you know, take control. And then you want to, you know, my father prefers chose not to deal with the nuts and bolts of his finances. So I do handle that. But, you know, as I describe it, there are certain things, the large picture decisions I bring him in on. You know, if it's an investment decision, I will say, what do you think about this? I'll offer my opinion. You know, he may have a certain point of view. A lot of this day-to-day stuff at this point I handle. But, you know, a lot of that was discussed up front about how we would deal with certain things. You know, I think, you know, one of the phrase I use is understand whose money it is. You know, conversely, I even talk about it in terms of my kids. You know, I make them realize that just because I'm paying the bills in certain instances, I'm trying to make them realize that, you know, if they want extras, I'm trying to get them to see that they have some separate bank accounts, you know, they're sort of their gift money and things like that. And I'm starting to transition them to start to think about using that money more and more for certain things because, you know, it's their money now that they have to deal with. So you know, everybody's got to sort of take ownership in different ways of their money. So it works both ways.
And what if you in that sandwich generation need help yourself in dealing with the finances if you don't understand what kinds of decisions you should be making for your parents?
Well, there's a lot of places to turn to. I mean, first of all, you know, I mean, this would be true in general, but I mean, it's good to bring in certain types of professionals involved. I mean, you know, I say, you know, you may want to bring in an estate attorney. Everybody should have a will. And, you know, my father did not have a good will, and I needed to get that established. I needed to have a good will. I mean, I'd had one, but I had to get it updated. So, you know, you want to do that. You want to bring in a certified financial planner or a financial advisor of some kind. I generally say, you know, look to a CFP. They're kind of the gold standard in the industry. But, you know, if you're looking at sort of, you know, either if you, you know, a lot of the myriad details with an elderly person's care, whether it's, you know, planning visits with doctors to managing a financial budget, I mean, a CFP can do some of that, but, you know, if it's a lot more just, you know, how do I pay the phone bill? How do I deal with that? I mean, there are essentially professionals that deal with that, geriatric care managers, they're called. I mean, they do charge for that service. And there's something called the Aging Life Care Association that can put you in touch with one in your area. You know, that's especially helpful if you're dealing with an elderly parent who's out of state. You know, if you're not physically close to them and you want somebody to kind of oversee things, that can be, you know, invaluable. But even if you're, you know, even if you're close, but you don't want to maybe, you know, you don't have the time or you don't want to deal with all of it, that's another source for it where you can get some help.
That is this weekend's Jennifer Kashenka with Market Watch reporter Charles Passy. It's 21 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
Do you want to learn how to steal customer credit card information from major retailers so you can buy anything you want?
Well, we can't help you with that. But among the many IT problems we solve, Barracuda's award-winning firewalls prevent hackers from taking your valuable data to the bank. Reclaim your network like 150,000 other businesses have. To learn more about protecting customer data and your reputation, visit barracuda.com/firewalls.
Thanks for being with us. If you're among those who still say no to joining a fantasy football league, you've lost a key member of your support staff. Recently taking the plunge is first-timer Jason Gay, sports columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He's already partly sorry since he didn't have a very good draft. Jason, why'd you do it?
Resistance was futile. I think that's what it was, Gordon. You know, like a lot of folks, I had this attitude about fantasy football for a very long time that it was not something for me. You know, when the conversation turned to fantasy teams and who was doing well and who wasn't, I tried to run across to the other side of the room.
Right.
But, you know, anyone who's watched football this season so far after week one has noticed just the astonishing number of advertisements for fantasy outfits like FanDuel, DraftKings. Fantasy has just sort of become this massive American preoccupation. And I just felt, as a sports columnist, Gordon, I might just be professionally negligent if I wasn't somehow involved in this. So I had a friend who had gotten in touch with me. Somebody had dropped out of a league. They needed a last-minute replacement. He said, do you want to do this? And I said, well, yeah, I didn't have a good reason.
Right.
And so we had our draft, and there you go. I've been miserable ever since.
Right, of course. You drafted a quarterback in the first round, right, which is something I guess I recently found out you're not supposed to do.
Well, Gordon, I went into the draft. The draft was the same night as the Venus Williams, Serena Williams quarterfinal. And as you know, I'm a big tennis guy.
Yes.
And that was my professional priority that night. So the draft was happening at the same time as the tennis match. So I didn't do any reading in advance. I didn't do any sort of research about how to play fantasy football, even just sort of like a modicum of strategy. I didn't do any sort of work. That might have been a tactical error, Gordon. I as you said, I drafted a quarterback first, which I learned the day after. Not a wise move,
right?
In fantasy. You want scorers. You want people who put their noses across the plane of the end zone. You want Gronkowski's and Marshawn Lynch's and guys who are getting six a couple times, preferably a week. Right. Quarterbacks can help you, but they're typically the kind of the people you draft later in the round. So I made a mistake there. My second pick was Steve Smith of the Baltimore Ravens. Why did I pick him, Gordon? I like Steve Smith. But it turns out just liking a player is not a reason to take a player.
Right.
You need to put a little bit more thought into it. So that said, I put myself into an early hole. The robotic draft analyst for our computerized fantasy league gave my draft a grade of D+, which was the worst in the league.
Yeah.
The robot analyst mocked me, which was a special kind of humiliation when you're being mocked by a robot.
Right.
And yet, Gordon, my team did pretty well in the first week. We nearly won. We were not blown out. We were not roadkill.
Mm-hmm.
We were competitive all the way up until the very end. And this is the other hazard, Gordon, of fantasy, as you've discovered, is that you end up watching games that you previously had zero stake or interest in.
Yeah.
So here I am watching this San Francisco, Minnesota Monday night game, which began at like 4:30 in the morning.
Right, Tuesday, yeah.
Was about as exciting as watching a goat take a nap because I had players in it. I had guys who were theoretically going to make a difference for me. As it turned out, they failed and I lost the game closely. But, you know, again, this is just, it's been one misery after the next. I don't see any of the fantasy yet, Gordon.
Yeah.
It does explain the world to you. And I felt like, you know, even as a quote-unquote insider, which I never sort of have viewed myself, Gordon, you know that.
Yes,
I'm as an outsider as an insider as gets. But being part of the fantasy has sort of explained aspects of the football economy, which I never quite understood. Like, for example, I never understood, like, things like, you know, Dez Bryant getting a fractured foot, why it was covered like a lunar mission, like why it got so much attention.
Thanks, Jason. Wall Street Journal sports columnist Jason Gay. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. You're results-driven and you're ambitious. You've established yourself professionally, and now you're looking for more. Take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey with Edible Arrangements, the brand that revolutionized gifting with handcrafted fruit arrangements and gourmet chocolate-covered fruit, now also offers delicious everyday treats like smoothies, fruit salads, and parfaits. As an Edible Arrangements franchisee, you get access to an established brand with 16 years of growth, over 80% brand recognition, and 1,200 locations worldwide. You'll benefit from know-how, support, and millions of visitors to the Edible Arrangements e-commerce platform. Discover why Entrepreneur Magazine named Edible Arrangements a top franchise and among their best of the best for 2015. Start your journey to sweet success as an Edible Arrangements franchise owner. Call 1-888-727-4258 or go to edible.com. That's 1-888-727-4258 or edible.com. Now, something to chew on this weekend when you grab a beer, uncork a bottle, or pour some booze. A new study published in the journal Obesity has found that when you raise a glass, your brain's sensitivity to food aromas is heightened, resulting in a serious case of the munchies. More from Dr. Mitchell Gaynor, clinical assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City and creator of GeneChanger.com. Dr. Gaynor explained the findings.
We've known for a while that alcohol does seem to stimulate appetite, but what this study did is they gave alcohol actually intravenously to one group of women and just saline, which was a placebo, to another group, and then looked at MRI scans of their brain and found that women that received the alcohol ate more, and they had a heightened sense of taste and smell the food, which made them want to eat more, and that correlated with activity in the part of the brain that controls that called the hippocampus. And so it was really a very well-done study, and it really elucidates why drinking with food or at happy hour does make you want to eat more.
All right. Is there a type of food we tend to crave when we drink?
This study really looked more at carbohydrate-rich foods, but it could be anything because everything smells better, everything tastes better. The thing about alcohol is the effects can last for hours. It's not just while you're drinking the alcohol. So, you know, it's important if you're going to drink that you have healthy snacks around at home and also have healthier foods to eat while you are eating so that you don't load up with a bunch of carbohydrates, increase your risk of diabetes, cancer, heart disease, things like that.
We're speaking with Dr. Mitchell Gaynor, clinical assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City, also author of a book called The Gene Therapy Plan. Can you train your body differently, I guess? I mean, I know you're supposed to want to have, say, celery stalks and carrots around when you're drinking to try to balance, but, you know, what How can you make yourself want, you know, a Mediterranean salad when you're having a beer or a glass of wine?
Well, it's actually not that difficult. It really depends, you know, what foods you're having around and what you're getting used to. Clearly, the more refined sugar and refined flour, you know, the more fast food and processed food you have, the more you're going to want that kind of food. You also have to be a little careful what you're mixing the drink in. So say if you're having, you know, a shot of tequila, that's got a limited amount of calories, but you throw it into a sugary margarita mix and all of a sudden you've quadrupled the number of calories. So a lot of the things you mix drinks in, like soda, that adds a lot of calories. The average soda has 10 teaspoons of sugar in it, so you're better off, you know, mixing it in something that's not loaded with sugar.
All right, so you mentioned before that you tell your patients just one drink a day. What does that drink actually do for you?
Well, there are some good things. Even in beer, it contains phenols and polyphenols, which are anti-inflammatory, can lower heart disease and cancer risk. Again, it's a matter of quantity. So no more than one. Same with red wine, loaded with phenols, polyphenols. Also has resveratrol, which has some anti-aging properties, anti-cancer properties, anti-diabetic properties. But again, the key thing is to limit it to one.
It's Dr. Gaynor, Dr. Mitchell Gaynor from Weill Cornell Medical College in New York. 21 minutes before the hour on this weekend. You do whatever it takes to make sure your business runs efficiently, but constant trips to the post office can get in the way. With Stamps.com, you'll be able to spend less time at the post office and more time growing your business. Stamps.com makes mailing and shipping easy. Use your own computer and printer to buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package. Stamps.com does all the thinking for you. The digital scale will calculate the exact postage needed and help you decide the best class of mail based on your needs. Join over 500,000 small businesses that use Stamps.com and never go to the post office again. Right now, use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A four-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com. Enter Deal. what's new with technology in cars. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the Enderle Group in San Jose, recently wrote a piece about what Intel is working on. He says while they're working on a headlight system, for example, that can pierce rain and snow, the company is also focused on reducing and eliminating security breaches in vehicles so cars can't get hacked. Rob, what's up here?
Well, so we just saw recently a demonstration where somebody was able to take over a Jeep and pretty much operate it remotely without a lot of work. And it used to be you could remote control a car when they were older, but it would take you putting in a lot of servos, a lot of mechanisms. In fact, if you ever saw one of those cars that was remote controlled, pretty much the entire driver's seat, much of the passenger seat, was covered.
Yeah.
And so you really couldn't do it secretly, and it would take you weeks, if not months, to get it all working. Nowadays, most of the cars are drive, or at least a lot of the new ones, especially the high-end ones, are drive-by-wire. The steering wheel, the throttle, the transmission, the braking system are all controlled largely by computers. Well, to address this exposure, Intel, who acquired a few years ago McAfee, which is one of the larger security firms, formed the Automotive Security Review Board to make sure that as we move to self-driving cars, some hostile force, whether it be the kid down the street that just is screwing around or China, can't take over your car or a whole bunch of cars and cause them to turn left on a bridge and become amphibious. So that's what's going on here is the auto industry has been very, very slow to come to this idea of security, but very fast with regard to technology. And as a result, they're about a decade to maybe a decade and a half behind the computer industry, which of course has been facing security problems for that period of time, and to a certain extent has been hacked very successfully of late because a lot of the IT managers didn't learn the lessons in time and didn't put in place the protections that we have.
Mm. We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle. It does sort of, in a way, make me long for my 04 Camry, even though it actually gave out and had to change cars.
Well, yeah, so my argument is that pretty much any car before 2005 is likely going to be safer over the near term, at least with regard to hacking. Do you remember these things do wear out, though, so you have other issues. But after 2005, the companies got pretty aggressive with regard to a technology, and it kind of depends on model. But until the security programs are put in place, the cars that have all this technology are relatively vulnerable, especially Chryslers, which, of course, are going through one of the most massive recalls in history to try to fix some of the problems. But as we've discovered in the technology space, layering on a security solution as opposed to designing it in are two very different processes, and a layered-on solution can often be easily bypassed with a module or something that's easily installed. So the right thing to do is to go back in and look at this stuff and design it to be secure from the ground up and maybe separate better the operational systems of the cars from the entertainment systems so it's much harder to attack them. You know, the most secure car right now on the road is arguably the Tesla. But even it was exposed. It was found to be exposed. Not the car itself. The Tesla corporate network was found to be exposed. Fortunately, that was relatively easy to patch, and they didn't have to do a massive recall on the cars. It just showcases that Tesla's been kind of designed like a computer system is designed. And so, if they find a problem like this, they can fix it electronically and massively, as opposed to having to recall the car and yanking stuff in and out.
Mm. You know, one of the complaints I've heard about all the technology, too, and you know this, is that these cars now can be really expensive to fix. But part of me says, too, well, with all the technology making cars smarter, maybe there will be fewer accidents.
Well, that's the hope. I mean, the offset to that hope is, of course, if the cars are hacked, and you can hack, say, 1,000, 10,000, or 100,000 at once, suddenly that throws that statistic all out. Because if you get 100,000 cars that just receive the command, go to full throttle and turn left, you've got a lot of fatalities really fast. So that's the issue here.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle from San Jose. By the way, as part of this, Rob says Intel has formed what's called the Automotive Security Review Board. 13 minutes now before the hour on this weekend. The violent nature of the NFL requires that players recover quickly from one game to the next. How do they do it? One way Cincinnati Bengals star wide receiver A.J. Green says he does it is with a weekly routine that includes ice baths and massages, plus the protein drink Rock and Refuel Muscle Builder. AJ, what happens Monday after game day?
First I go to the facility to get some treatment, get in a cold tub, watch film, and then after that, get a massage. And Tuesday, get a workout in, get a nice workout, run on the treadmill about 2 miles, half a mile, whatever. Then get in the cold tub again, and then Wednesday I'm back to practice.
Broadly speaking, how is 2015, how are the expectations different for you this year than last year, if at all, for you and the team?
For me, I just want to be healthy through the whole season, play a whole 16 game, and hope can play 17 and 18 and try to get to the Super Bowl. I think the expectation for this team is very high. We all hold each other accountable.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing, is to take us to the next level, is holding each other accountable and just playing for each other.
We're speaking with A.J. Green, wide receiver with the Cincinnati Bengals. He's promoting the Rock and Refuel Muscle Builder. As an endorser, like, you've got to really protect the A.J. Green brand, right? Mm-hmm. But the NFL life can be tough, right? I mean, there's always somebody grabbing at your shirt, wanting your attention or something. How do you protect the A.J. Green brand?
Oh, man, I think the NFL, you know, a lot of people say it's tough and how you handle that lifestyle. I think if you stay true to yourself, man, you know, being humble like I was from the beginning, and don't get caught up in all that, a diva, or we get paid all these big bucks, so it means we act differently. I think if you stay true to yourself and everything else to take care of yourself, and that's what I was doing this whole time I'm in the NFL, man. I'm still the same old AJ, but I'm just playing at the highest level. I think if you take it like that, you know, everything else is easy. I don't get caught up in all that. I'm a superstar and all that stuff like that. I just go out there and play football and be a regular guy off the field.
All right, but socially, sometimes if you're out with the guys, like, there are a lot of temptations out there, right? I mean, how do you say no, or how do you avoid trouble? Do you go back to a phrase that I don't know, somebody told you one time?
I don't know. I don't have temptation, man. I don't drink, so I'm in a good state of mind every time I'm out.
Oh, wow, okay.
And I think it's for me, I just don't want to, you know, tarnish my name.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. If you live by that, you don't want to mess up your name on the back of that jersey. You just got to live by that, and you'd be fine.
Yeah. Are you a good money manager? I know that, for a lot of guys, it's a big shock getting the first paycheck. I know you're a couple years in at this point, but do you find that, are you a disciplined money guy?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely disciplined with my money. I'm married, so that makes it easier with my wife.
Right.
She doesn't like me to spend. She doesn't spend. So I think it's easy once you have these, you know, you're married and you're both disciplined.
Yeah.
Disciplined. But, no, I don't really buy anything at all, so
man,
I'm fine with that.
Thanks, A.J. A.J. Green, Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Thanks for being with us. So there's a new app that does for presidential politics what Tinder does for dating. It finds a match. It's called the Voter app. To find which Republican or Democratic presidential candidate is most in line with your positions, for example, you swipe left or right for, say, repealing Obamacare, or swipe left or right for increasing the minimum wage. The app was created by a guy named Hunter Scarborough, who tells The Washington Post he wanted to cut through all the punditry, stump speeches, and character attacks to match voters with their ideal presidential candidate based on shared interests. It's modeled after the famous online dating app, which took much of the front-end effort out of finding a mate. To get a quick sense about which candidate might be right for you, there are 8 pretty basic questions to answer. You swipe right for yes, swipe left for no. But if you want an even deeper connection, there's a second level of questions with even more policy positions. The Washington Post says a third level is even in development. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.